Hello and welcome back to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast for our first episode of 2020. Shit, it feels good to say 2020, doesn't it? It's got such a nice ring to it. Although it does kind of sound like some sort of documentary channel. Anyway, lovely to be here for the new year. I hope you've had a great break. Being in New Zealand, this is not only our Christmas break, but also our summer break. So we had 2 weeks off and I have been adventuring. We did a big family 3-day bike ride prior to Christmas, and then Christmas at home on the farm, and then we did a 4-day hike in the Marlborough Sounds, which is the top of the South Island of New Zealand, before New Year's, and then just a week kind of hanging at a holiday house down there as well. So it's been an amazing summer so far. I hope you've had a great break wherever you've been, whether that's in the Northern Hemisphere or in the South like us. If you're just joining us for the first time today, then welcome. As a quick intro, my name's Claire and I'm a registered nutritionist and I also have a degree in exercise science, and I specialize in helping women to figure out what's driving their hormone imbalance, which we call the root cause, and then what are going to be the most important lifestyle changes for them to make to address that. So like, what are going to be the key dietary changes or the key other lifestyle changes? Maybe it's not even exercise, maybe it's sleep, maybe it's getting some vitamin D in you. Right, so those are the sort of things that we deal with. But today on the show, we have got a super special guest. Her name is Hayley Sproul, and she is the queen of our screens here in New Zealand. She's the host of The Great Kiwi Bake Off and Have You Been Paying Attention? But most importantly for us, she's a fellow cystic sister. So she's a writer, she's a comedian, she's an actress, she's an absolute queen of the pantsuit, and just all-round great woman. So Cystic Sisters is actually the aptly named title of her mini documentary about PCOS that she released a couple of years ago in 2017, I think it was. So she was on her own mission to figure out what was going on with her body and also make light of the symptoms that we suffer from. And given the being she's such an incredibly funny person, comedian, she is the best person to do this. So she set about making this lighthearted documentary to interview some experts in PCOS and just figure out what this was all about. So I absolutely love this talented girl, and I think that her lighthearted perspective on what can otherwise be a pretty mortifying symptoms, like having to shave your moustache, is exactly what we need more of. So I was super stoked, quietly, when she slid into my DMs. And what do you know, but she's a listener of the podcast. So we had a great chat and I was like, right, we have to get you on board to come and talk about your journey with PCOS and about Cystic Sisters and just make this more known. So without further ado, let's get on and chat to this hilarious woman, Hayley, and I hope that you enjoy this interview. So welcome to the podcast, Hayley.
Thank you.
It is so exciting to have someone in the room with me. Normally these are all on Zoom, so it's, well, A, like, so exciting to have my pantsuit girl crush here. Like,
honestly, the pantsuits are everywhere. I've worn so many pantsuits.
You have. If you haven't seen Hayley's Instagram, like, recent pantsuits include, there was a great pink one that you wore to the New Zealand Fashion Awards.
Yeah, that had, there was New Zealand TV Awards, and that had shorts.
It should have been the Fashion Show Awards.
I wasn't invited. I thought the same thing, to be fair. A lot of I love red pantsuits. Mm. We wear a lot of those recently. Yeah. Nothing to do with my political agenda. It's just a great colour. Yeah, I love the pantsuit. The only thing I will say is they're really hot.
Yeah, a bit.
In a studio.
Lights.
How men wear suits to work every day. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either. Good aircon. Anyway, we're not here to talk about pantsuits.
We're not.
But that is also great, like a great topic, maybe for future episodes.
Different podcast.
Yeah. So, do you want to start by giving us a bit of an overview of kind of just your PCOS story? So what happened to you? Like,
yes.
Why you ended up getting diagnosed and,
yes,
and how?
Well, I was properly diagnosed when I was 21 years old. So that's 9 years ago now. And I can't remember sort of what pushed it. I thought it was my period wasn't irregular. It was absent, absolutely gone.
Right.
And, I think we'd long suspected that it was that, but it was my flatmate who looked at me at 21 and was like, you have PCOS and I know it. And so I said, oh, okay, we'll go get this thing. And I got the internal scan, which is just honestly delightful. And lo and behold, there was a lovely crop of cysts all over both ovaries. And that was the diagnosis, sort of then and there, you have PCOS and that's why your period is gone. And then it was long suspected because for as long as I could remember, I've been a hairy woman.
Right.
And a hairy girl, a hairy child. Like, even I remember being embarrassed about my mustache at like 11.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that it's been a long time coming. And then all through my teenage years, you know, absolutely mortified at the sight of my own hairy body.
Mm.
And especially when you start having sex. I mean, the whole thing is like, you know, I was
just awful for a teenager, right?
Like, horrible. And even that thing of like, you know, you've got all your body issues that you have as a teenager, around weight and appearance and all that stuff. And then you put that on top of it. You're like, why am I dealing with this? And you're looking at your, you know, fine-haired blonde friends and just going, oh, you know, it's because I've got brown hair or something like that. And people would be like, do you want to go to the beach? You're like, sure, give me 2 hours to get ready for that. So I think, yeah, it was sort of, there was something always kind of off in that way. Then I was diagnosed and I was put on the pill, any old pill, I think. And sort of through the years, and that was it. That was the information that I received, that you've got PCOS and you don't get a period. Here's the pill. And then I went on a few different pills over the years, and then I landed on one. And that one was to help fix my skin, which was just starting in my early 20s to sort of start playing up a little bit with acne. Not acne, but just pimples that I didn't enjoy.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of the time they say, well, maybe try switching pills and you can, you know, sometimes that helps it. And so I went on one and it made me crazy. And I lost my mind and I was depressed and I was like, I could just flip at any moment from rage to tears to happiness. I was absolutely, yeah, just felt so out of control. And at this point I'd met my partner, Aaron, and he was sort of agreeing with me in the kindest way that it wasn't my normal behavior. And I am a moody gal and I am a very expressive person. I'm quite fiery, but this was like out of control. And so that was sort of when I was about 27. So a few years ago. And I thought, I went and saw a naturopath and I had gained all this weight. I had my moods were horrendous. I was just in such a bad place. I had eczema everywhere. I was just having a really bad time. And I went and saw a naturopath and she was like, why don't you try just coming off the pill and we can try some natural approaches. And I was just so down for that. I was like, absolutely. I've been on this thing for, you know, 10 years already. And I'm ready for a bit of a cleanse. And that's when the acne hit me like a ton of bricks. And even though I was doing, you know, living a clean life and going to the gym and doing my absolute best to be a beautiful, natural person, this acne was just fierce. And yeah, that's when I made this documentary called Cystic Sisters, was because I was just absolutely at a loss and I was trying to fix so many things. And then this acne, which I didn't even know was in my life plan, you know, I didn't even know it was coming for me.
Especially not at 27, right? Like, no. You think, oh, well, if that was going to happen, it would have happened at, you know, 15, 16, 17. You think, God, mid-20s, late-20s, should be over. And yet this is the time when you're assaulted by it.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes like that force. And for you, when you're, you know, on TV all the time, that is your livelihood. And
well, when it hit, it was just when I'd started working in front of the camera on television. So I'd been writing for this show, Jono and Ben, RIP, and then I got a role on the show every week. And I was just turning up in the makeup chairs in tears every week, apologizing, you know, anyone, every time it was a new artist, I'd just, this anxiety would just take over and you'd sit there just feeling so ugly. And then you'd have to go on camera and they, like makeup artists, bless them, none of them cared. None of them said, oh, you know, they all just, oh, who cares, you know, blah, 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 blah.
But it's, they can work a treat, right?
Yeah, and I look back at some of that footage and they do, but you know, you know, and it's really so horrible for your self-esteem.
Yeah. And that affects, you know, although you're saying like the pill will really affect your mental health as well, like that affects your mental health when it's like, oh my goodness, how am I going to turn up, do a good job when I'm more worried about what's exploding from my face than actually, you know, making everyone laugh, which is what my job is.
Yeah, you know?
And
totally.
Having that, and you've got to have a lot of confidence to do what you do. So,
yeah,
like That's a horrible, horrible symptom. And a lot of people downplay it, I think, and I think that's a really hard thing. It's like, oh, it's just a bit of acne. It's like, no.
It's not. And it's also, I mean, it's one, there's the you know, one level of the appearance and being embarrassed about that. But two, like, it hurts. And it's so uncomfortable, you know. And I was just saying, like, you know, as I sort of wanted to learn a bit more about PCOS, and I always knew the list of symptoms, and I always knew the ones that affected me, hair loss, you know, stubborn weight gain, lack of period. I was like, that's me. I didn't know acne was part of that at all until it came. And it did the typical acne, PCOS acne thing of just going on the lower half of my face. Yeah. So I get the sort of occasional one up the nose or the forehead, but the beard area was shocking.
Yeah. And was it like really cystic, you know, like underneath the like skin, those ones that don't even really come to a head?
Yeah.
So painful.
Yeah. Do you know the real turning point for me with my acne, when I was like, I have to do something about this, was I was doing a one-woman show in the comedy festival, and it was a hot show, really sweaty, it was really busy, and I was lathering up my face with makeup. Would have looked shocking under the lights. And then at the end of the show, it was all off, and they could probably see my skin, who cares? And I bowed, and all the blood rushed to my head as I bowed, and the pain I felt in my acne, I was like, oh my God, I'm on stage in front of these people, and they're applauding me, and all I can hear is the heartbeat in my pimples. It was like, doo-doo, and I was like, oh my, it's got to go.
Wow. Yeah. That's next level.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, though. No one really talks about the pain of and how you're kind of just sitting there trying to do your work. And, like, I don't know about you, but just my hands go to my face.
Yes.
You just want to do anything to try and, like, squeeze them or release that pressure or whatever. And it's like, it never works.
Yeah.
It never works, but it never stops you from doing it.
No. And they always say, don't touch, you know. And when people say, like, well, you've got acne, don't touch your face. You're like, I'm telling you, it's not my hands touching my face that's causing this acne. But thank you for your concern. And two, when they're like, don't pop it, you're like, I've got to put makeup over this. I can't have like white heads or, you know, fluidy face.
But that is so funny though, what you said about just being like, well, thank you very much for your unsolicited advice.
Like, I wash my face at night.
Yes, I clean my sheets.
Yes. Oh my God, that. Yes, clean your pillowcases.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah. And so, for those of you guys listening to this, like, you'll know the same thing. It's like, it's not that you're doing something wrong and not, because I think that's the thing, as a teenager, you go and get the Clearasil washers.
Yeah.
I don't know, so you didn't have acne, but I definitely did not. It wasn't really, really bad, but it was like,
you had pimples, yeah.
And it's like, you try what was that one that was on the
Proactive.
Proactive on the TV infomercials when we were teenagers. And you try all that, and then they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's like you're eating too much chocolate, or like there's different foods that might cause it, or yes, you're just dirty.
Yeah.
You don't wash your face enough, or you're close enough. And you're like, and as teenagers, you don't know enough to be like, I'm on that, because I'm sorry. But as you get older, you can, and you can kind of take it with a grain of salt. But like, just again, as teens, it's like such a horrible thing to have.
And I'm sure there are some, you know, that teenage acne that is just from being, you know.
Well, it's just hormonal, right?
Yeah.
As a teenager, I mean, this is why girls shouldn't be diagnosed with PCOS before they're 16 years old.
Yeah.
Because you naturally have higher testosterone levels.
Yeah.
And you naturally have, like, irregular periods. Like, that's because your neural pathway from your brain to your ovaries hasn't formed you to tell it to be like, hey, time to release an egg. And it's just kind of, it's like, you know, now, like, when you're older, you kind of have, like, a motorway or a highway. Whereas back then, it's like this gravel road down the back of, like, Tauman Nui. Like, you know, and for those of you not in New Zealand, this is like a very rural New Zealand. But, you know, like, we still have like metal or gravel roads in a lot of places. My farm lives on one. And it's like that, you know, that it hasn't kind of formed that pathway yet, that it can like make that connection really quickly. And so it can take months for your body to ovulate. And that's totally normal when you're a teenager. It's not normal when you get into your 20s.
Yeah, it was interesting because I got my first period when I was 13, you know, like, maybe a little bit after everyone else, but, you know, it arrived, and sort of with all the excitement of a first period, you know, with my mum and all that. And then it just never came back until I was 14, a year later, almost like to the day it returned. And we thought nothing of it for years. And then again, you know, it was 7 months and then it was 3 months and then it was a year. And it, all through my teenage years, it was super irregular, but we just, you know, we put it down to that as, you know, you're just developing and, and you're all over the show. And then my mum, when she knew that I was sexually active, at 16, I'll admit it here and now, she would constantly make me take pregnancy tests because we just had no idea that the irregular period was to do with PCOS. No, like she was like, how will we ever know? And I could be like, Mom, no, I'm a virgin. She's like, shut up. And she used to always make me take pregnancy tests just to, because she was like, where's your period?
Yeah. It's just like, I have taken way too many pregnancy tests in my life. You know, like, it's like, this is crazy.
The rhythm method. I tried that because when I came off the pill, I was like, I, you know, I've been told quite clearly that the chances of me getting pregnant are slim, not only because of PCOS, but because of a number of other issues that I have. But I'm not I'm not taking that gamble. Like, I don't want to just sort of free fly with my partner and, you know, accidentally get pregnant. So I did so much research about the rhythm method and how you log, you know, in your cycle. And I was like, my cycle, really? Which is like, I think off the pill, something like 220 days long, like for it to have one period.
And the rhythm method is very, very bad, even in people with their regular periods. It's like 60% effective.
Oh,
so it's
honestly,
like, if you want a 40% chance of having a baby, go for gold. But yeah, if you want more, then, you know, like, it's never good, and let alone when you have. And although you said, you know, you've got other issues in terms of fertility stuff as well, but for women just with PCOS, like, they often get told when they get diagnosed, you're going to really struggle to get pregnant. So they are a lot more, like, just flippant with their with contraception. And then it's like, oh, my God, we're having a miracle baby. And my response is always like, well, that's great if that's what you want, but that was wrong information that you got given.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
The only reason why you would not be able to get pregnant is if you weren't ovulating. And even if you're, like, getting a cycle that's 120 days long, you're likely ovulating in that cycle. Very likely ovulating in that cycle. If it is a period, if it's actually a real period, if it's not breakthrough bleeding. But, so you could very easily get pregnant if you were having intercourse, like, 6 days around that.
I mean, I'm sure over you making this podcast, you've talked to so many women, and through your work with, you know, clients, you've probably heard of so many stories of people being like, I hopped off the pill and thought I was fine, and then I was like pregnant like that with PCOS.
Totally, absolutely. And you just hear it from a lot of women, like friends and stuff, who go, oh yeah, I was diagnosed with PCOS when I was young, and I was told that I had trouble getting pregnant, and I come off the pill and I got pregnant the first month.
Yeah.
And then just as many stories of people where it's taken them, you know, 6, 7
years. Totally.
So it's like one of those things that just, I think the advice should be, hey, this is more about explaining what's going on, why it could affect fertility, how it can affect fertility, and then you can actually understand it rather than, I don't know about you, but when I got diagnosed, I just thought I had these kind of precancerous tumours sort of growing on my ovaries, which is what I thought cysts were, and that they were like releasing all this testosterone, and that was what was causing all the issues, and that was what would be stopping me from getting pregnant. My understanding of when my doctor said you'll probably struggle to conceive, my mind immediately went to that, and I made a whole bunch of assumptions,
yes,
stuff that she didn't say,
yeah,
but it was really incorrect assumptions that would have, like, if I had not kind of specialised in this area, I'd probably still be believing today.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, when we understand what's actually going on, then we can be like, okay, right, I can see how I might struggle to get pregnant, but I can also see how I could easily get pregnant and therefore still have to be careful.
And I think that's, like, I find that, like, knowledge is power, right? And it's so empowering when you, like, I have no intent, I've never wanted to be pregnant, I don't want to be pregnant now, I have no intention of getting pregnant, but I want to know how to get in control of it, so that if that changes for me, I'm not then starting to learn, like, what did I need to be doing through my 30s in order to make that happen?
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, right? With PCOS, I got told when I was 22, if you want to have a baby, better do it soon. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my gosh. And that, I hate that. Because that, what are we doing to a woman? That we're setting them up on this path to say, hey, like, this is, and PCOS actually extends your fertility, if anything.
Because you're not releasing the eggs.
You're not releasing the eggs. Yeah. They think it actually extends it. I would say, caveat to that is, we haven't had any, like, clear clinical evidence of that. But if if they still think that we are born with the number of eggs that we are, and we release those as we ovulate, then the likelihood is that it actually could extend our fertility much longer. And I do know a lot of fertility specialists who say, yes, it's very, like, our PCOS patients often getting, like, pregnant later. They might even have more trouble, like, in their 20s, and then when they get into their later 30s, they get pregnant just like that. So, but telling a girl who's 22 is just that, yeah. That really irks me.
Yeah, me too. And it's, I mean, ever since I was a teenager, I was always like, I don't think I'll be a mom, you know. So at 22, to have the pressure of, like, confirming that put on me, I was like, well, I guess, you know, you always sort of go, I don't want to be a mom. But, like, in your head, you're like, I'd like to have the option to be if something strikes me one day and I feel that urge. But not at 22. So if I have to say at 22 yes or no, and I have to decide on that day, the answer's no.
Yeah.
You know?
But imagine if you were the opposite. Imagine if you were like, well, I definitely want that in my future. I don't want it now, but I definitely want it in my future. And if I had to decide on this day at 22,
yeah,
I'm going to say yes, and it's going to change the whole course of my life.
I know.
And, yeah. So that is something we do need to change, and hopefully we are trying to change the medical world, and I hope that, I mean, there are a lot of amazing gynecologists, endocrinologists, and doctors who would never say something like that.
But yes.
Unfortunately, we do know there are a lot who might not have received, like, updated information, and literally the amount of information that a general GP gets in their, like, training to be a GP about polycystic ovarian syndrome is tiny, and literally that is all it is. It's like, hey, this is what PCOS is. The general understanding, what they get told, is that it's for most women, it's because they've put on weight, they'll develop PCOS, which is, again, completely inaccurate. And they'll say, right, this is what happens. They'll get irregular periods, so put them on the pill, and then when they want to have a child, then we use Clomid, letrozole, or one of the other ovulation induction.
Yeah.
And so that's all the information they get. So, of course, when we come in and say, what is this? And we're scared by this diagnosis, that's the only information that can parrot back to us.
Yeah.
And it's not right, but it's kind of that where we're at the moment, and hopefully that will change soon.
Do you know, that's why I was drawn to you, and why I found your stuff, was because, I mean, I've seen nutritionists, I've seen naturopaths, I've seen doctors, but no one's a specialist in the area. So when I saw PCOS nutritionist, I was like, okay, this is what I need. Like, this is who I need to talk to, because, you know, like you say, like, they might do a class on PCOS and then move on to something else, as opposed to really, like, honing into this thing that is truly at the center of my life most of the time.
And center of 1 in 10 of us.
Right? Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing, that's so common, and no one realizes this.
Yeah.
But also, too, I think that it's great that also led you to go and, like, create the Cystic Sisters documentary.
Because yes.
It's that, from what I saw from you, like, that desire to be like, hey, I didn't get any of this information when I was diagnosed.
Yeah.
How can I actually get this out there? Because I'm meeting all these women who have PCOS, and none of them have any more information than what I do.
Yeah. Do you know what? Making that documentary was a real – because that was a turning point for me. So That was when I was at a real low. The acne had sort of started. My hair was honestly gone. I was really slaving.
And not the hair on your beard. Right?
And no, and that was flourishing. The hair on my head was absolutely running away from it. And I was slaving at the gym. You know, nothing. It was just a terrible time. And I just started sort of doing some work with TVNZ, and I had this idea to go, oh man, like, well, I feel so alone, you know, and I feel like, I know I'm not, but, like, how can I start this conversation? And so I, you know, pitched the idea to them to make this documentary with the angle of sort of talking about it through laughter, because that's my big thing in life, is anything that's difficult or anything, you've just got to laugh, because if we don't laugh, we cry, you know. And I mean, PCOS is horrible. It's not, no one wants it, but a lot of it's quite funny. You know, if you break it down into different elements, it is funny. Like, I had a mustache since I was like 11 years old. That's funny. It is funny. Hair removal's funny. Gynecologist appointments are funny. And to sit around and have a yarn, I mean, before we started recording, right, we just want to, like, yarn about it, because connecting with people makes it feel so much lighter. And so for that doco, I put this call out to my sort of actor artist friends saying, does anyone have PCOS and want to sort of have a chat on this doco, and it was like boom, 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 all these friends that I had no idea.
Wow.
And it, and from that point till now, I just feel so much, I mean, I struggle with it all the time, but just, I just feel lighter being able to laugh at it and not be ashamed of it and not hide it and, you know, just all be working together to understand it more.
Yeah. I
have a laugh.
I think that's so true, that being able to just not be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
Like, I love seeing the girls on Instagram who are like blatantly shaving their face. They're like, this is what we do. This is normal. Like, let's normalize this.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, all that sort of stuff, like getting into a new relationship and like, oh gosh, you know, like for, like I've never had hair like growth. That's the one thing I've never had. I've got this weird patch of dark hairs on the back of my legs.
Back of the thighs? Absolutely. Yes,
that's the extent of it for me. Like, it's never been, never like anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing that I can't necessarily like relate to, but gosh, I can empathize.
Yeah, like, totally. And I feel like when I was younger, that was, for me, the lack of period is a blessing. It's something I just don't have to deal with. And like I say, I'm not on the lookout to get pregnant at the moment. So it was really for me the hair, like the hair growth. And I just thought I had thin hair. I didn't realize that was part of PCOS at all for years. So it was all, that was the thing that I was so upset about, was like, it makes me hairy and I hate that thing. And then luckily for me, I met my fiance now, Aaron.
Ooh.
I know.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I
know, like literally like a month ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, thank you. But I met him when I was 21, so just as this diagnosis was happening. And we're, you know, together nearly 9 years later. And so a lot of that anxiety about my body and hair and all that kind of stuff is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can't take me with a snail trail, then you can't have me at all. And he doesn't, you know, like the thing is, I mean, men, if you're straight and you're a woman who likes men, I don't think they even notice. I don't think they're really that bothered by it. I mean, if you're naked in front of a man, he's stoked. He's not worried if you've got a patch of hair on the back of your thighs.
Oh my gosh.
He's not looking at that.
We all know that they have, like, you know, the, like, I have detail, like, of a, I don't know what kind of animal. I was like, of a goldfish, but that's a memory. So
yeah.
I don't know what, of a sloth?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, like that, the eye for that kind of, like, you know, detail is not there. And,
yeah.
And as you said, it's, they're far more concerned about, like, you and the amazing stuff that, why they like you.
Yeah, totally.
Than
your mustache.
Or the pimple that's erupting from
your Yeah. Skin. When this, I mean, because my acne broke out way late into our relationship, he couldn't care less. He was just super concerned as to why it was happening and, you know, what had suddenly brought it on and why I was so upset. There was he wasn't like, ugh. Get your face away from me. So I'm sure it was unsightly at times.
Yeah, but I think that is, you know, for a lot of women, it is a massive concern about it. And the more we normalise this and more we talk about our experiences and, like, and our partners and their experiences, the better it is for everybody else, right? Like, it's like shaving your face on Instagram. I think that is amazing. And more women need to see that and know that it's normal and that this is kind of just what happens. And actually, there, you know, there are so many other, like, shitty things about PCOS, but there's also some really interesting, like, advantages in it. Like, as I said, maybe our fertility lasts a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Also, something I've been, like, looking about recently in terms of the extra testosterone makes us a bit more resilient.
Yes, I read that too. And they're, like, better at sports because of our competitive nature. You're a sports gal.
I think this is why I was so good at running.
Yeah, but they say, hey, like, that makes you, the extra testosterone makes you more outgoing, which can help you to achieve better jobs and, you know, claim things that are yours and be more resilient and outgoing.
Yeah, so I think we need to be kind of claiming that side of things and just normalize the other stuff. It's just like, hey, look, this is the shit. We can't control this, but actually, like, let's just embrace that.
Yeah.
It's good. And I don't want to be this glass half full kind of person because they're really, like, annoying. And when you're in the throes of your face erupting and, like, 7 years of infertility.
Weight gain.
Yeah, I don't want to be this one sitting here being like, oh, but, you know, let's be really excited that we have more resilience. It's like, I know that that's shit and no one wants to hear that, but when you can kind of take a bit of a step back, when you are out of that, and I think that's the good thing to go, right, what can we make from this? And also, what can we make from this resilient experience and how that's going to actually shape us? And potentially, if we do have children, we do have daughters, they'll probably go through the same sort of thing. So how, because PCOS is so genetic, that how can we actually, you know, learn enough that we can help not just ourselves, but generations and sisters and, you know, cousins and things like that.
If I had a daughter, you know, it's like I just know what kind of diet she would need. Not and I can put her on a diet, God, no, but... You know, you just have to be sort of a bit more aware sometimes. Yeah. I mean, that's why I made that doco as well, is because it's like the hiding from it. That's the terrible, that's when it becomes shame.
Yeah.
Hey, like instead of like in the doco, I think I get my mustache lasered. I have a PT session. I have a internal exam all on camera. Because it's like, this is just our life. This is what we taught. I saw a nutritionist. I cooked a PCOS friendly meal. Because, like, you know, none of it should be hidden away, whether it's the embarrassing bits or the fun bits. It's all just normal.
It's just us.
Yeah.
And so what did you, when you were doing that documentary, what were the big things that you were like, wow, I never knew that?
Well, I think the important thing to me was that I didn't want the doco to have an opinion, which sounds odd, but I didn't want it to say at the end, and this is how you fix PCOS. You know, I wanted it to just be an explosion of information and you watch it and hopefully it leads you onto your investigation. So it's not me. Yeah. So it's not me saying, here's the answer, because in the doco, I went to three specialists. One was a naturopath, one was a nutritionist, and one was an endocrinologist. And I tried to get their sort of strong take on how they thought PCOS should be cured. Obviously, the nutritionist and the naturopath had quite a lot of crossover because they're going from an internal, you know, like fix the root issue. But yeah, so I think, I just wanted to get this sort of a cross, you know, section of information. I think the biggest thing for me, I mean, I've had this diagnosis for nearly 10 years. And making that doco was the first time I heard the words insulin resistance.
Interesting.
Crazy, right? Yeah. Like, how was that not told to me beforehand? That was what that was? Because I heard that and I was like, cool, I'm diabetic? Like, what's happening? So honestly, I think learning about insulin resistance and now, you know, binging on your podcast, learning so much more about it, that's, I think, been the biggest sort of source of learning for me is truly how much the impact of the food that we eat and what kind of food we eat, you know, that the impact that has on your body is, I just was so unaware. I lost 18 kgs a few years ago, which is great. I was sort of like, where was it? Yeah. But I did that through near starving, you know, just because I was like the calorie in, calorie out version of how I thought you should lose weight.
Oh, how everyone's told we should lose weight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This is not just you. This is
everywhere. Yeah, and it really took way too much work to get out of this thing. And the weight was that real. I always say this word to my partner. I always say PCOS-y, and I'm always like, I feel PCOS-y. And sometimes you've got that weight gain that you're like, I've put on weight. But sometimes the weight feels PCOS. Do you know what I mean? And it's like that real, like, inflamed around the stomach.
Yeah.
And my face gets really bloated. And, you know, as opposed to sort of like a general gaining of weight, it's a really, like, inflamed weight.
Yes. And it's very, as you said, moon facey. And
yes.
Like, very, like, isolated.
Soft on the tummy. Yeah. And I just didn't know that that was sort of different to, you know, gaining muscle or gaining just general weight from overeating. You know, good food. I think honestly the impact of food has been the thing that I just had no idea. Because when they say to you, you know, maybe lose weight will help some of your symptoms, you're like, that it's really hard to do that when you don't know how.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, so lose weight. I've been trying this for 10 years and it hasn't worked for me, so give me the answer.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, just eat less and exercise
more. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been trying that, as I said, for 10 years.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. What's the answer?
Yeah.
And again, this is where, you know, if you don't have the information, how can they relate to us? But this is why, you know, it is so important that it's very rarely about calories, I find. That most women who have been struggling with weight gain for their entire life are very conscious about what they put in their body, because they don't want that to get any bigger. It's not this, I think there's a very societal image of someone who gains weight as someone that's like sitting there at Macca's three times a day.
Yes, and, yeah, you know, like not moving at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, to be fair, this is the image we were portrayed at when I was studying nutrition at university science. So this is a very classic image. And so when you walk into the doctor's office and they say, you've been putting on weight, that's where their mind goes. And they go, well, it's just simple. Just don't do what you're doing. I even had a patient or someone messaged me on Instagram. I think they'd listened to my podcast on weight and how it's, you know, more about insulin than what it is about calories. And she was like, I literally just got out of the doctor's office and he said to me in these words, just put the fork down.
Wow. Oh, my God. That's shocking.
And it's just that kind of like misunderstanding of how this all works and arrogance. I would say arrogance to a point too, that it's like not willing to accept that there could be any other reason why. And to be fair, even when we were at university, like pretty much the only explanation for why when a reduction in calories in a research study didn't result in weight loss, they would say was non-compliance.
Yeah.
That we think, even though their diet records were showing what they were eating, we think they were being non-compliant. And that is like the only rationale they will give. And so that's embedded in our like medical dietitian, nutritionist like mindset is that if you're following this and you're not losing weight, then you're obviously not doing it right.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want a doctor shame, but I find that because I've got a doctor now who is totally on my journey with me. She's great.
Awesome.
But I just find that rhetoric really dangerous. Mm. I mean, if someone said to me and I was working my ass off and dieting, put the fork down, what's the next step? It's an eating disorder, you know, and then you it just gets worse and worse from there.
Yeah, it does.
And also it's hard for them to take you seriously as well sometimes. I mean, I've always been a size 12 to 14 and I went in, you know, just before I lost this weight. And I said, I just cannot get on top of it. And it's just constantly gaining and gaining. And she was like, I think you look fine. And I was like, I'm not here for you to sort of like, you know, make me feel better about my appearance. I do look fine. But it's not, it's the feeling of it and it's the type of weight that you're like, this is not just heaviness. It's like uncomfortable inflammation, bloating, you know, and it's.
But you're right, though. It's not about doctor shaming, though. It's about we've got to recognize what's been ingrained in their mind since medical school, and as I said, that's what we were taught at nutrition school, and then like what tools they have in their kit bag to give to you. And that's no one wants to be in the position where they can't, when someone's asking them for help or saying I need you to help me with this, and they don't have a solution. Like,
it's
an embarrassing like position to be in as any professional.
Yeah.
And you're like, I just don't have the answers for you yet. And so of course you're going to just like put it back on them or be like, well, try this or go on the pill. And it's like, well, how's that going to help? But you want to just, and especially when you've only got 10 to 15 minutes with the patient, you just want to be like, well, just like, I have to just give you this and get you out my door.
Yeah.
And it's a shitty position for us. It's a shitty position for them. And this is why, like, I really want everyone to like understand this. But then also be like, right, I'm asking the builder when I should be asking the plumber.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
I'm asking the wrong person the wrong question.
Yeah.
I'm barking up the wrong tree. And if I actually just instead realise what their skill set is and then go to someone who has a different skill set, I'll probably get a completely different answer.
Mm-hmm.
The eating disorder stuff in PCOS is terrible. There's 20% of women have an eating disorder.
It's that real, like, last-ditch attempt with PCOS that I find really dangerous. You know, that thing of like, well, I've tried everything, so I have to do the extreme version. So I've tried dieting, I'll just stop eating.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I said to you with my acne, I tried this, I'm at a loss, I'm going to go on Accutane because I know, you know, and that's like, it's because you're at the end of your tether with that particular symptom, hair loss, Rogaine, you know, like you're at the end of your line with it and you're like, cool, I'm out. And I, even though, you know, I'm totally all about trying to fix the internal thing until it doesn't work. Yeah. And then you go, all right, you know,
whatever it takes.
Give me what you got.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is where, you know, what we have to do when we're in this position. And it's as you said, it's the same thing a lot of people with the development of disordered eating. It's the same thing with, oh gosh, why I went from when I wasn't losing weight running 10K, let's run 100K. Like, you know, like that And that was, to be very, very honest, very, part of the reason why I switched from being an elite runner to an elite triathlete, because I could train twice a day and not get injured, because I could swim and then I could run or cycle in the evening, and I wasn't doing as much running, so I wasn't going to get as injured.
And that sort of frames itself as a healthy lifestyle, right? At the outside, you're going look at her. I would look at you and go, oh my God, I wish I had that motivation. Mm. But it's a bit of disordered behavior,
yeah,
you know, because you're becoming obsessed, and it's you're not doing it because you're passionate about what you're doing. You're doing it for the wrong reasons.
And it is. It's really, really. And same thing it pushes us to. And they wonder why, you know, Kim Kardashian's like appetite suppressant lollipops sell so well. And it's so don't tell people not to do fads. Actually help them to fix the issue. I firmly believe that, you know, there are a lot of people that have just been I just want to lose, 10 kilos or 5 kilos before summer, and I've got, 8 weeks, and what's the fastest way I can do that?
Yeah.
But on the other side, on our side, there are so many women who are so desperate because they've tried everything else.
Yeah.
But of course they're going to give that a go because it is well, what's the harm?
Yeah.
I've tried everything else. And unfortunately for a lot of stuff, there is harm. You know,
yeah.
It's not a harmless thing. But when we're in that position of desperation, we're going to go with whatever we've got.
Yeah. And you know, as someone who's had body issues for, over half my life, I totally understand that mindset of the lollipops, the shakes, the cabbage diet, whatever it is, the fasts and all that kind of stuff. But I would say definitely over the last two years that I'm really shunning that now, because I know, sure, it works, but you're it never sticks, and that's just that quick fix. It's the Accutane of the body. It's the quick fix, get it done now. And I'm in for the long haul,
Yeah. And I think that's where most of us get to, because we're okay, well, we've tried all these other things, and as you said, we want a longer term solution now, and also too, when you start realizing, especially as you're talking about insulin before, what are some of the long term complications of not getting that insulin under control?
Yeah.
Things if you do want to conceive, is that, you're going to be at greater risk of gestational diabetes and possibly miscarriage and possibly preeclampsia, and you're going to then be, at greater risk of developing type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And if we can, do what we can at the moment to try and reduce that down, which will then hopefully reduce our symptoms as well, it's kind of a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
Whatever we're doing, whether we're on, birth control, whether we're on Accutane, whether we're on whatever, we can still also be treating that root cause at the same time.
Yes.
And then hopefully when, if we do decide to come off birth control at some point, we won't have that acne explosion that
yes.
you've faced, which is really, really common actually. A lot of women will have a backlash where their androgens, especially because what hormonal birth control does is it releases these testosterone sponges into your body. They're called sex hormone binding globulin, and they go around and mop up all the excess testosterone. So when you just take that away and you haven't it's unopposed, that testosterone is just going to be rife in your body.
Yeah.
And some women get a bad backlash of hair falling out or acne, but acne is a really, really common one.
I mean, I do sometimes feel like a bad PCOS girl, because I'm always oh, I'm terrible. I do all this research and try to learn more. And then I went on Accutane, recently come off, to be honest, because I just keep being on TV and I just couldn't get on top of it. And I'm currently on the pill because I don't want to get pregnant, and that's what works for me. But I have to remember that it's like you say, I did do those things because, Accutane, I needed a fast fix, and I found a pill that works for me, but I don't want to be on those things forever. And I have been doing the work underneath, whereas last time I was just living my life, and then I didn't realize that the pill was doing so much work for me.
Mm.
And then when I came off it, that's when it sort of all just went nuts. And my expectation now, I'm off Accutane now, my skin's really great. And, when I come off the pill, I don't expect that, because I have been doing years of work. You can't pop a zinc pill and expect your acne to go away. It takes years of sticking with things and not... I'm so impatient. I'm the one who's going to go through one packet of some supplement and be like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah.
So you kind of need to do it for like at least a year.
Yeah, exactly. And but that, I think that's a really good thing, is that it doesn't have to be in either option, right? Like, we can be doing a lot of this work at the same time. And women that I work with in my protocol, I'm like, just if you're just starting this journey, don't come off the pill yet, because you likely are going to have that backlash. Even if you do want to, come off it, but you don't have to. You certainly don't have to, and you don't. And also, like, you don't have to come off it immediately. Like, just give your body 6 months of trying to, like, address that root cause, and then you're likely going to have a way better, like,
time yeah, totally.
You want to come off it. But it's just that for a lot of women, they do want to get pregnant, so they are at some stage forced to come off it. And that's when, like, you know, you have the really horrible symptoms of, like, the stress of not getting pregnant, the acne explosion. You don't know what's going on with your body because your periods are, like, you know, 100 days apart.
Yeah.
And your hair's starting to fall out and you're like, whoa, like, this is, like... Because trying to conceive is a horrible time for so many women. Not that I've experienced this myself again, but it's like I can totally have empathy for those that are going through that, because it's just that expectation and the not knowing what's going on and just that feeling that it's the one thing that's really out of your control.
I mean, I think the thing that was valuable coming off that pill before I went back on a different one was, like, it does reveal what is going wrong, you know, I didn't realize that acne was under there. I didn't realize that was just waiting to be free from the pill to come out because of the way I was living my lifestyle. I didn't, you know, you just don't know these things. And so even though it was really horrible, I think I was off it for almost an entire year. And even though I really struggled in that year, I was like, okay, well, at least now I get to see what is my cycle doing, because I've been on this for 10 years. My periods used to be like this. Are they still like that?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I think I got one period in that year and I was like, cool, at least now I know that that's what my body wants to do, is just have that one period. At least I know that acne is an issue that I have to deal with, because I just didn't know these things. So in a way, even though it was untimely and unenjoyable, it was kind of an interesting experiment to sort of just go, what is my natural state in the way that I haven't been supporting that natural state. I've just been, you know, taking the pill and thinking that I'm living a great life. But, like, what is that natural state? And now I can address it.
Yeah.
And even though I've gone back on the pill, I know that those things exist. I know that acne is there and ready to come back. I know these things now.
Yeah. And also, you're under no illusion that the pill is fixing anything, like, long term. And I think that's the thing when we do get prescribed it, they say, well, just go on this, it'll, you know, fix your periods. It's like, well, no, a period is a full cycle of estrogen and progesterone and the subsequent uterine lining shedding. Like, that's, the period's not causing that. The period's causing a chemical version of that, which mimics what a period is, but it's not fixing anything. So
no.
But it is suppressing those symptoms, which is valid, right? So that's the valid thing that we go, right, okay, well, if I know this, then I can go, yeah, okay, that's what I want. I want symptom suppression, so I'm going to take that. But I'm under no illusion that it's actually fixing anything. And I'm, like, likely going to have... Whereas so women think, no, I've had regular periods for the last 10 years. I'm like, oh, right, like, have you ever been on the pill? Yeah, for like 10 years. Okay, well, that's not a period, right? Like, and I think that's now women are way more conscious of this through... social media and a lot of women talking about this more now, but, you know, 5 years ago this wasn't really talked about, and a lot of women didn't know that that wasn't actually a full cycle period.
No.
It was a bleed.
Yeah.
It was a synthetically driven kind of cycle as opposed to a normal. So I think that's the really good thing, is that it's not necessarily bad, like medications at all, like, have their place and can be totally worked in with a more natural treatment. And that's where I actually think that is the best option, is when, like, medicine and natural remedies kind of come together, when it works for that individual and it works for their symptoms and what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it can be like trial and error as well. Like, I think I've been on maybe 6 different pills and I've only just now found the one that does work for me alongside the life that I want to live and alongside this PCOS journey. You know, the other ones, they all came with something that just derailed it, or, you know, didn't work for me, but it was just trial and error. And I hate that. That's the worst thing, right? When people are like, it just takes time.
Yes.
And you're like, oh,
yeah.
And I want it fixed now, but it just takes time.
So Where can people find this documentary? Because it's so good. So I didn't realize, but you did it 2 years ago.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's 17 minutes long. So it's not like it's a full, you know, Netflix special.
And slightly less biased than a Netflix special.
It is. It doesn't have a strong opinion.
She's no game changers.
No. So you can find it on YouTube if you just YouTube Cystic Sisters. And you'll see my face and you'll recognize it by the pimples that I had at the time. Or if you go on my social media, shameless plug, yes. Hayley Sproul on Instagram or Hayley Sproul on Facebook. That's linked in my like bio and all that stuff.
Oh, cool.
And it's just, honestly, it's like chatting with some friends about PCOS. And it should just be seen as a starting point for people who are really curious. Because we should laugh. You know,
I agree.
Yes,
and that's what I loved about it is that it is just nothing else about PCOS has ever been humorous before.
No,
and it's so good to like have a different perspective and be like, yeah, she's right. This is quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite parts of the doco is when I get my partner Aaron on, and that's been the most amazing thing for me is like sharing my learning with him so that he knows more. You know. And it's so funny just because it's a very female-driven documentary. And then suddenly there's this man, and I asked him what he thought he knew about PCOS. He was like, oh, yeah, the periods and the mood swings. And I was like, well, you know something, I guess. Bless him.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, my partner, we always joke that, like, our house is, like, you know, period chat and, like, you know, fertility and, you know, nothing's, like, TMI.
Oh, but, like, God bless 2019, right? Mm. Like, so many men are way more in sync with, way more in tune with, like, period chat, you know? And especially, like, when I look at my friends with their male partners, I'm like, this is great, you know, that you don't put your tampon up your sleeve and you're all embarrassed. You know, it's just like, it's full. I want Aaron to know everything about my body so that he can understand, you know? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, get where these problems come from, or then I'm, you know, yeah, I am a bit mood swingy, but it's not my choice.
It's like, this is, the psychosis is not actually, you know, it's not me just being irrational.
Yeah.
It's like, this is something I have very little control over.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I think that's like, you know, gosh, I thank God we're not back in the 50s when hysteria was still a diagnosis, isn't it?
Oh, we'd be in hospital.
We'd be committed to Cherry Tree Farm or some sort of other like mental institution. But that's, like, that is one of the things we just need to get away from, is that it's not like that. It's not by choice, and it's not even a mental health really issue. It's like a hormonally driven, for many women, for many it is a mental health issue.
Mm.
But that we actually recognise what's driving this and hopefully how we can better understand our bodies so we're more compassionate towards it rather than just being like, why are you losing weight? Why you keep gaining weight? Why have I got these pimples? Why? Because that's the, like, that kind of the way that we talk to ourselves and
yeah,
when that's happening is just horrific.
It's just knowledge. Like, that's all I want for people with PCOS is to just investigate, you know, in every single route. Like, talk to the doctor, talk to this, look at food, go on websites, listen to podcasts. Because it might not give you the one answer that you want, which is how do I get rid of it? Mm. And there is no answer for that. But it's totally changed how I handle it, deal with it, you know, mentally how I can cope with it when you're having a bad day and you're going, it's not me, it's this thing, and it's totally chemical and that's fine, you know. And it's years ago I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You just think you're a fat, hairy, balding woman and you're like, who wants that?
Yeah, and I think that's brilliant that's been your takeaway from doing that documentary.
Yeah.
And is not that there's, I found there's this one diet for
PCOS.
And it's not that, because it's just, you know, not true and horrific. But is that just that empathy, understanding, compassion for yourself.
Yeah.
Which is great. So are we going to see a follow-up?
Hopefully. It's in conversations to see a follow-up. Because I think it's a very naive documentary from my sort of the perspective of it is quite naive, that I come at it knowing nothing and I'm talking to these experts in trying to get some knowledge. And so I'd love to do a follow-up where I have implemented what I learned through that documentary, because I have, and over those 2 years, totally changed my way of thinking. And I get off the bandwagon. I ate a pizza and a burger in the same day the other day. But yeah, I'd love to follow up and just sort of what else have I learned, or, you know, who else do I want to talk to? And
but I think that's also really good to see, for you to share, is that it's like, we don't have to live these perfect angelic lives. No, it's just like, no, actually, no, no, no. Like, we are real women living in real existences who are not like living in the jungles of Burma, you know, doing meditation each day and eating like, I don't know,
leaves.
Yeah. Like, we don't have to, we can live in the real world. We can have stressful jobs. We can have, like, we can live in urban environments, which are inherently stressful. We can eat, you know, a pizza and a burger in the same day, and the world's not going to end.
Yeah.
But it's just that understanding, more understanding about body, and that we are making informed choices, and that we can kind of make better choices most of the time.
Yeah.
And that's really all we need to do.
I think definitely on everyone's journey, they're going to read something that's going to tell them they can't drink alcohol, and there's going to be something that tells them that they can't eat carbohydrates. Mm. And that's, I mean, I get that. But after a while, I just made the decision that that's not the life that I want to live. You know, I come from a wine-drinking family. We love wine. I love to socialise.
Mm, mm.
It's just about that balance.
Yeah, and it's finding that for you. And I would completely disagree with those two things that, yeah, like, people say. It's like, you can't eat carbohydrates, you can't drink alcohol. It's like, that's, even if you've got some insulin resistance, very few people can't tolerate any carbohydrate ever in their life. Even, yeah, you know, we might have to do a bit more restriction early on and try and get their insulin functioning properly, and then, you know, add them back in, or it might be certain types of carbohydrates that are better than others. But it doesn't mean that, you know, today actually is Thanksgiving in the US, and I put out something in my group. I was like, you know, even if you've got some insulin resistance, doesn't mean you can never have some pie. Like, we don't want,
yeah,
pie being this forbidden pie. Like, it is just that knowing, okay, cool, well, I'll have that slice of pie and I'll really enjoy it. And then I probably won't have one tomorrow, because I know that's been like, it's not so great for me, and I'm not going to eat, yeah, all the leftovers, like, pie. But having that one piece was really good, it was enjoyable, it was part of the tradition, it was part of socialising, and now I can, you know, I can go and not have that for a few days and feel, and not feel really deprived as well.
Yeah.
Because that's the worst thing.
I read something that was, that says, it was something like, there's 50 days till Christmas, which is old now, 50 days till Christmas. And they counted the days that are, you know, like, people are waiting for January 1st to start, yes, their journey.
I think this was on my Instagram.
Sorry. Oh, was it your Instagram? Yeah. Look at that. You know, people are waiting for January 1st to start their journey.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, was it like 11 days, yeah, that, yeah, you go?
So it was, I think it was on November the 9th, and it was like, so we've got, you know, 59 days to Christmas, or whatever, yeah, it was. And it was, so there's like one day of Thanksgiving, one day, one meal of Thanksgiving, one meal, well, maybe four meals on Christmas over Christmas.
Yeah.
One January 1st, and then maybe five
parties.
So it's like, well, 10 meals. And am I really not, like, starting something, or just starting to learn about my body and maybe what works better, and trialing a few things, all for the sake of, like, 10 days,
yeah,
or like 10 meals?
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's the,
like, it's the days. Monday mentality, eh? Oh, Monday. Yes. I'll start on Monday.
Start on Monday.
So I'm going to really go in deep on the weekend. You're like, no, start the next meal.
Yeah. Or, and that it doesn't have to be this all or nothing thing. And then
no,
that's where the Mondays comes from, is thinking, well, I've screwed up today, so I have to wait for Monday because everything has to be perfect.
No. Right? Yeah.
And that's this dieting cycle and dieting mentality that I think is so damaging, and we really need to get out of. And the, like, sooner we realise that actually there's no forbidden fruits and we can have this, and it's just learning. And I hate the saying everything in moderation, because for some people, that, you know, that what is moderation, it's all very subjective. But learning kind of what's most likely going to be the biggest things for you, and then, like, being very 80-20 about it. And I'm,
yeah,
a very 80-20 person. I'm like, cool, so let's focus on these five things that are going to have the biggest impact. Why would we spend a lot of time investing in this thing that's going to have 1%, like, impact for you?
Yeah.
It's just not, it's not worth your time. So just kind of focus on the biggies and leave little fish for later. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Anyway, words of wisdom for all of you.
Wise. I love it. That'll take you into the holiday season.
Oh, it's so funny. We're, like, sitting here in this, like, meeting room in my office.
Yeah.
Being such, like, wise old Buddhas.
This is what we know.
Yeah. So anyway, I try not to, like, be preachy like that, but it's just really good to hear different experiences, and so good to hear, you know, from you, like, coming through that now, like learning so much from doing the documentary and speaking, as you see, to so many different professionals and getting their lens. Because that's the thing, we all have our biases, we all have our lenses, so it's really good to get a bit of a broad overview. And then, yeah, now 2 years later, and like, look at you, old clear skin over there.
I know, my beautiful clear skin. I'm very arrogant about it, but only because, you know, when you've had acne and it goes away, you are so proud of it. And the worst thing is, I can't stop touching it. And I know that people are going to be like, stop touching it.
But, you dirty girl, stop touching it.
I know, yeah, stop it. Wash your pillowcases.
Anyway, that's any last words of wisdom or anything else we've said. Well, I'll link in Hayley's Instagram and the YouTube and stuff into the show notes. You can find her Instagram there. She's hilarious. She's such great value. So do follow her along. And if you are in New Zealand, make sure you're watching. Have you been paying attention?
Yes.
And also the Great New Zealand Bake Off.
The Great Kiwi Bake Off.
Kiwi Bake Off.
Yeah, with all the sugar in the world. So you can watch and have a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, my only, honestly, it's just talking. Talking and reading about it. Those are the things.
And normalizing it.
Yeah.
And laughing about it.
We're all good.
Yeah.
It's just PCOS.
So good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So good to have you here.
So good.
That is a wrap for this week. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as I loved it too. So definitely go and check out the show notes for the link to Cystic Sisters, Hayley's hilarious mini documentary about PCOS. I've also provided the links there for all Hayley's social channels. Definitely follow her on Instagram. She is hilarious, as well as you can see her amazing array of pantsuits that she wears on Have You Been Paying Attention. I especially like the red one that she's been wearing lately and the pink one from Ruby, New Zealand Ruby, who are my favourite brand of all time. Most of the things you see me wearing on here are from Ruby. And and also she's just incredibly funny. So a really good one to follow. But that's all we've got for this week. I hope that you enjoyed that and we'll catch you again next week. Same time, same place.
Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.